With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This episode of the Cult Popture Podcast was brought to you by our Patreon. If you want to tell us which films we should watch, get up to 2 extra exclusive podcasts a month, give us something to talk about in the post-credits scene at the end of each episode, or join us for our monthly movie club Zoom call where we discuss a film together, then please consider joining the cult and donating at www.patreon.com/cultpopture. Hello and welcome to the Cult Popture Podcast.
Hello. Thank you for welcoming me.
More specifically, this is film franchise Fortnights on the Cult Popture Podcast. And even more specifically, this is our episode on Robert Rodriguez's Mexico trilogy. And even more specifically, that's three films. El Mariachi from 1992, Desperado from 1995, and Once Upon a Time in Mexico from 2003. All directed by Robert Rodriguez.
This whole podcast is just a descending list of more specific things until you've got the whole picture. This is film franchise Fortnights. We watch a film franchise every fortnight. And I'm AJ, and over there is Richard. We're both in our dressing gowns today, which feels like this hasn't happened before.
No, this happens all the time.
That we've both been in our dressing gowns?
All the time.
Really? It's usually one of us, but both of us?
No.
I don't know, man.
I'd say this happens more often than not.
I don't know. Anyway.
I'm often in a different dressing gown.
Right.
Which, the black one has it has a hood. And the hood has grey on the inside of it.
Did it get stinky?
Why?
Because you're wearing a different one. So is it in the wash?
Oh no! All right. No. You don't need to wash dressing gowns.
Yeah.
Have you ever washed your dressing gown?
I have, but it's always far more annoying because I don't have a dressing gown for a day or two, and I'd rather just live in my filth. Anyway. So the Mexico trilogy, is that what we're calling it? Is that the name of the episode?
The Wikipedia page for it is called the Mexico trilogy, also known as the Desperado trilogy on some released DVD products. I mean, I would probably sooner call it the El Mariachi trilogy than the Desperado trilogy.
It feels like the El Mariachi trilogy is a fine title for the whole thing.
Because he is El Mariachi, that's the main character.
That's the character's name. And so that's what I would have assumed. And this is one of those rare franchises where it feels like it doesn't really have a name. And maybe that's because it doesn't really feel like connected movies in so much as just more three movies starring sometimes the same people playing the same people. And sometimes the same people playing different people.
Does it remind you of any other franchises like that?
It does. It reminds me of three other franchises that we've covered. Okay. This feels like it belongs in some kind of categorization, some kind of Google sheet. And they're all color-coded blue or something. Yeah. And those other three franchises would be Mad Max, The Evil Dead, and The Man With No Name.
So the Man With No Name trilogy, the Dollars trilogy, whatever you want to call it, was a big influence on this. We'll get into it more as we go through the films, I think. But it's like that is kind of a deliberate, it's by design, I guess, for the film. So, but it is, especially the move from the first film to the second one,
Whereas the Evil Dead and
Mad Max
comparison is more just that they both started out with shithouse cheap films. Shithouse in terms of quality, quality of film, but shithouse in terms of like what was the budget for El Mariachi?
First film we're talking about is El Mariachi, which came out in 1992, and has a famously low budget. It was budgeted at about $9,000 And Jesus the Christ. Final total was $7,225 spent. Although Robert Rodriguez theorizes that if he hadn't had to buy film or like taking out the cost of like buying the actual 16mm yeah. film, he shot on 16mm rather than 35 because it was cheaper, that it probably he probably only spent about $600.
We could, I could afford this film.
Yeah.
The only thing that's stopping me is drive. That's crazy. That's probably the cheapest film I've ever heard of, like of this magnitude.
It is worth pointing out, the version that you see had about $1 million spent on post-production, tidying up
right.
the sound, color. But I think that $1 million also goes towards marketing. Right. So it was touched up because it was originally made for the Mexican home video market and it got turned down. So he's like, well, fuck it, I'll see if Hollywood wants it.
Yeah, nice.
And then it generated all the buzz in Hollywood.
Nice.
We're getting ahead of ourselves. What is El Mariachi about?
El Mariachi is about a mariachi, so a guitar player, a Mexican guitar mm-hmm. player, and all he wants to do is go to this little town, get a steady job in a bar, and just pay his wage. But meanwhile, there is a dispute between like a drug lord. Is he a drug lord? Is it a mob boss?
Yeah, crime lord, yeah.
Yeah, crime lord and one of his like lackeys who has gone rogue over a payment dispute. And the reason that El Mariachi is tied up in all of this is that both the rogue criminal and El Mariachi carry around this guitar case. And El Mariachi, of course, carries a guitar in his guitar case, whereas the rogue guy carries around a bunch of weapons. And so in this little town, El Mariachi is mistaken for this crime lord, and it's basically a really quintessential mistaken identity film where a reluctant hero is thrust into having to perform and save the day because people think he's someone he's not. So by no fault of his own, you know, he is thrust into this adventure, and he falls in love with a barmaid, and by the end, a lot of people die, and he's basically the only one left. And he sort of, it almost ends implying that like he's resigned himself to now he's like lives in the underbelly. He is no longer an innocent mariachi.
Yeah, it's a beautifully simple film in a lot of ways. I think it's one of those ones that is just so easy to get on board with, and you can see why it kind of picked the scrappy nature of the filmmaking as well. It's fantastic. You hadn't seen this movie before, that's right?
No, I hadn't at all. No.
So we mentioned this last week when we rolled it, but yeah, I watched this movie It's called Broadcasting School. The school that AJ and I actually met at. It's called Broadcasting School, but, you know, film school, essentially. I watched it at film school. So if you hear me say Broadcasting School or B school, I'm talking about, you know, the equivalent to film school.
Is it going to come up a lot in this episode?
But, so I watched this film while studying at B school, and you had to, you know, when you're writing these big fucking essays, you have to reference texts and stuff. So I actually also read the book that Robert Rodriguez wrote about the production of El Mariachi called Rebel Without a Crew, and it's got a subtitle like, or how a 23-year-old with $7,000 became a Hollywood player. Because he's 23 when he made the film as well. So it's an incredible book. It's fascinating. It's essentially just his diary from like shooting. I think it starts before shooting, and then it's like his diary each day of shooting, and then goes through like selling the film and everything. And it's like there's all these fascinating tidbits, and it's this weird thing where like El Mariachi and that book are almost like, you know, like some of the most important pieces of pop culture to me in terms of like my moving forward as a content creator. Like anytime I make something, I always think about Rebel Without a Crew and El Mariachi, because like there's so many great like tidbits about like essentially Robert Rodriguez did everything on this film. He wrote it, he shot it, he scored it, he did all the VFX. The only thing he didn't do was act in it, and that's because there wouldn't have been anyone to operate the camera.
And like he like the same thing goes for Machete. This is the third, if you count Spy Kids and Machete as two different franchises. Is that right? This is their third Robert Rodriguez franchise. And from memory, he did everything on at least the Machete films. I don't know about Spy Kids, but yeah.
Yeah, like and actually, like, Robert Rodriguez has an interesting filmography as well, because there's, like, we could also do, he's got, like, his hero duology, because he made that semi-sequel. Sharkboy and Lavagirl, there's obviously Sin City and From Dusk Till Dawn as well. There's only a couple of films. So he made The Faculty, which is a standalone thing. Planet Terror, but that's part of Grindhouse, so that's kind of like a duology there. Shorts and Alita Battle Angel is his only other film but Alita Battle Angel was made with the express purpose of being a franchise. So, yeah, he's only really made, like, two films that aren't parts of franchises, which is really interesting.
Yeah, and I mean, like, it's even more interesting by, like, how difficult it is to sort of pin down what a Robert Rodriguez film even is, you know? Like, I feel like he's definitely, there's definitely two types of Robert Rodriguez film.
Yeah, definitely.
But even those, like, vary wildly. Like, there's either the Spy Kids or the Desperado. Yeah. You know, those are the two types of films. Kids films or ultra-violent more mature films, but even those sort of vary wildly in tone and style,
quality.
Yes.
He also directed the music video for Rain On Me by Lady Gaga and Ariana Grande.
His best work.
Robert Rodriguez, I find him such a fascinating filmmaker, and the varying wildly quality of films, like, other than I guess Sin City, he hasn't had, like, his Pulp Fiction, you know, like, because him and Tarantino are really good mates, and they sort of came up at the same time. El Mariachi and Reservoir Dogs came out in the same year, and so they're very similar. I think Clerks followed not long after, and they were these kind of like three, like, pulled themselves up by their bootstraps and just got out there and made a film. And then, you know, you look at how all their careers have differed. Kevin Smith obviously did Clerks, and they're all the kind of guys, like Tarantino, not as much, because I think Tarantino had, like, it was still a shoestring budget for Reservoir Dogs, but he was able to attach these kind of big names by getting people whose stars had faded a bit, whereas Al Mariachi and Clerks are very much just like, oh yeah, I called up my mates and we made a film on the weekend.
Oh my God, Al Mariachi stars jack shit.
they don't even
bring them back for the sequels.
Carlos Scalado, who plays El Mariachi in the in this film, has a cameo on Desperado, but not himself. Like, and actually like three or four people have cameos in Desperado, but like none of them, most of them hadn't acted before. Peter Marquardt, who plays Moco, doesn't even speak Spanish. He had to read his lines off a cue card and didn't understand what he was saying. So he met Robert Rodriguez because that other, like, famously Robert Rodriguez raised the money for this film by being like a lab rat, by testing drugs to lower your cholesterol. He's paid like $100 a day for 30 days and was just like confined in this thing. And so he wrote some of the script in there, I think, and met this guy, Peter Marquardt, who and got him to act in his film. Even though they did speak Spanish.
What did you think of Al Mariachi?
I really like Al Mariachi.
Yeah.
Obviously a large part of that is just like the filmmaking and the kind of the attitude of it and knowing all the stuff behind the scenes, having read the book. But again, like I said, it's like this beautifully simple plot, wrong place, wrong time, mistaken identity. These are all just like such easy kind of, like, for lack of a better words, they're like these simple plots that, you can just immediately buy into.
Yeah.
What do you think of it?
And I appreciated that. Yeah, I mean, Another comparison here could also be Peter Jackson's rise to fame.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably around the same time, I think, as well, with Bad Taste and Brain Dead, that sort of thing. And I agree. I think that the filmmaking and all that is really fascinating, and it's lovingly amateur in a way that feels like, give me a DSLR, I could probably make something that looks about the same, if not better, in some shots. But like, as well as that, I think, what succeeds about it is it's just a really, really good story. And I really liked this one a lot more than I thought I would. I watched this with my friend Kate, and as I put it on, she was like, is this supposed to be good? And I was like, it's supposed to be interesting. Like, it's supposed to be like, wow, that's so fascinating. And I would categorize Bad Taste as more, the Peter Jackson's debut film, as more interesting than it is good. And I'd probably categorize The Evil Dead as more interesting than it is good. And Mad Max as more interesting than it is good, especially Mad Max. But this, I think, out of all of those sort of shoestring budget amateur films, I think this easily is the best story. I loved it. I thought it was great. What does it have on Roddy T's?
What would you guess?
I feel like the love of backyard filmmaking would boost this quite high, regardless of how otherwise amateur it might be. So I'm going to guess like mid-90s.
93.
There you go. Yeah, I thought it was fun. I thought it was a great film. Fun.
Yeah,
very fun.
It is great. And it's
and
like
short. Oh my God, it's like 80 minutes long. Thank you.
And I mean, I could just go on and on about like all these fun behind the scenes trivia. And so I won't go on and on about it, but I do have some fun ones that I want to share. Because as well, I mean, the only other time I'd seen this movie, I got the DVD of it out from the video store. Remember those?
Yeah.
And when you put the it defaults to playing with the DVD commentary on. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, it's the dialogue in it isn't very important. You could watch this film with the set like muted and you would follow the plot. Just play with the DVD commentary. And so it's just like him going through all these things. Then I read the book and it goes through a lot of the same kind of stuff. And then there's also like a special feature that goes on like into like more detail and has all this great behind the scenes stuff of like how he did everything. But yeah, like there's at the start of the film, the jail is like a real functioning jail, and the warden and the guard are just the real warden and guard, and they're like, sweet, I don't have to pay actors or pay for costumes now. And then when he rolls into the town, he's like, oh, he gets a coconut from the side of the road, and then the voiceover's like, wow, free coconuts, I could get used to this town. They added that line in because they forgot to film paying for it.
I did wonder about that. I was like, why is there just a guy adding, giving away free coconuts apropos of nothing? I thought it was strange. That's so funny that there's an answer to that question that I forgot I had.
Yeah. And then there was, because he's shooting in this like quite small town and fucking like half the town's in the film.
Yeah.
At the end of the film, the like the Moco's big gang, the final boss, it's just like teenagers because they'd like run out of people to be in the film. But they did, because obviously word spread about this, it's like, you know, like fucking shooting in New Zealand kind of thing. But there were these two journalists that were like especially critical of the filming and, you know, would talk on the local news and show that. So he just gave them roles in the film and they ended up being two of the only people that don't die in the film. And that was like his way of paying them off.
That's awesome. I love that.
Yeah, but I definitely recommend checking this out. Like, especially if you have interest in filmmaking, it's like to me, it's like a must see.
No, I'm surprised I hadn't seen it until now.
Yeah.
I would have thought that I would have come across it by now as well. I love the poster for it, where it's like like a shot from the waist down of him walking along a road with a thematically significant turtle like on the road with him. And I love that. I think that's such a cool.
And do you know that turtle that wasn't in the script? They just happened to be a turtle there, and they're like, "This is a cool shot."
This is great. This is so Robert Rodriguez.
But yeah, and there's all this like there was no storyboards for the film as well, because it's like, who would he show them to? It's just him.
Right, yeah, good point. That's so funny.
But yeah, it was a success. It's considered the Guinness World Records recognizes it as the lowest budgeted film to gross $1 million.
Of course, it would be, yeah. Under 10 grand. That is insanity. Mm. That is so little money.
And it's been inducted into the Library of Congress as part of its National Film Registry. But it is one thing I will say about this kind of like era of film, you know, is so you get filmmakers like Robert Rodriguez, Kevin Smith, like the classic ones who go, like, it's so much like, you know, we went out there and we made a film for nothing, and it's easier than ever to go out there and make a film now. Mm. And it's like, it is, but it's so much harder to get recognized because it's like, and like the thing is that it's like, yeah, like if you want to be a filmmaker, your goal is just to make movies. It's easier than ever to do that now.
Sure.
But if it's like, yeah, if you want to be a big Hollywood player like these guys, yeah, your little backyard film probably isn't, no one's really going to care.
And also, like, I feel like the novelty's worn off, whereas, like, in 1992, you can convince a whole sleepy little town to be in your film, whereas, like, now, especially in New Zealand, we're like, oh, my God, like, fucking go to Twizel, be like, hey, can I film? They'll be like, no, you got to pay us, you've got to, like, it's filmmaking has become such, like, I don't know. People have commodified it in New Zealand, I think. And that's probably a good thing, to be honest. I don't know why I'm acting like that's a bad thing for people. But, like, I feel like now if I went to my local prison and was like, hello, can I film a scene where someone breaks out of your prison? They would be like, no, you cannot film a scene where someone is breaking out of our prison. You know? Like, that's I think, a big difference as well, is, like, it's just not as novel anymore. And with, like, several film schools in New Zealand even, like, it's, you know, like, Peter Jackson was starting out now. I don't think people would be giving him as much free rein to do whatever he wants in various things, you know.
It's sad.
Sad. Where is what's happened to us, you know? I've been watching a lot of Would I Lie to You, the British panel show with, like, David Mitchell and Lee Mack, and there's this fantastic clip from it that's like a meme now, but I didn't know about it till I was watching it, where David Mitchell's going on a rant about how, like, it's essentially like a parody of like a back in my day rant, and it just ends with him being like, I do this, I do that, I shout on panel shows, we used to make steel, and like, it's like his voice like cracks as he says steel, and I feel like that's what I'm doing right now. It's being like, we used to make steel. Anyway, just a shout out to the show that I've been obsessed with for the past couple of months.
Yeah, it's cute. It's nice. It's nice to see you
happy about something again. After Barbie.
Okay, so that's Al Mariachi. This is going to be a nice quick episode, I think. But I would definitely recommend check out Al Mariachi if you haven't seen it. So 2 years later, that was followed by Desperado. And what is Desperado about?
Well, so I wrongly believed this was just a remake of Al Mariachi.
It actually originally was just an English language remake.
Right, because the if you listen to our last film franchise, Fortnights, I compared it to Evil Dead in the sense that Evil Dead 2 is essentially just part sequel but mostly remake of Evil Dead 1.
Although it's not entirely without accuracy, because Desperado features a reshot ending of El Mariachi.
Mm. But that's about it, though.
Yeah,
it's just a reshot, and they presumably only do that because they recast the main character as Antonio Banderas, who is now El Mariachi is now like a full fledged hitman, which is quite the career trajectory. And he's essentially looking for, who's he looking for? The guy that killed his girlfriend at the end of the last of the first film, and yeah, it's just. And he hooks up with Selma, is it? No. Who's he hook up with? What's her name?
Selma Hayek.
Selma Hayek, yeah.
Because Eva Mendes is in the next one.
No, I was thinking of Penelope Cruz. I always get them mixed up.
Oh, right.
And they were in a thing together once, and I was like, what? Selma Hayek. And so they're basically going after this other mob boss. Turns out to be El Mariachi's brother, and he kills him, and it's pretty simple. I don't think it's as elegant in its storytelling, but it is a lot more impressive in terms of its filmmaking, which I think is definitely where its strengths lie. But I would say overall, and this is maybe somewhat of an indictment on Robert Rodriguez as an artist, is that El Mariachi, for as amateur as it is, it's also very, very grounded. And the situations are lavish and extreme, but the way it's shown to you is very grounded, whereas Desperado feels like a jump into what we would eventually see in something like Planet Terror, where like it's now sort of reveling in its action schlockiness. And I liked it because it's cool to see, but if we're talking which film's better, El Mariachi's way better. You know, do you agree?
And critics agree with us. What do you think it says on Rotten Tomatoes?
72.
64.
Fucking hell, that's really low. I thought it was a lot better. It has a real cool opening scene with Steve Buscemi sort of walks into a bar and like weaves the tale of El Mariachi to the bar people, the people at the bar, and I thought that was a real cool opening, and I'm surprised it's 64. That's very low for how lovingly crafted this feels.
Yeah,
moments.
And this was it had 1,000 times the budget of the last film, but it was still an incredibly low budget feature, $7 million.
What did he make between this and El Mariachi and Desperado?
Nothing.
So this was just El Mariachi.
2 years apart.
Did so well that that he was able to make this.
Yeah. And so he recast the lead with Antonio Banderas, made it in English, obviously for a wider audience. But this makes it makes this our fifth franchise where Antonio Banderas appears in a sequel but not in the first film.
All right, so Shrek.
Yep, where he's Puss in Boots.
The SpongeBob movies.
Yep.
The Expendables.
Mm-hmm, where that's where he's in the third one, so we can't just say he's introduced in the second film.
But he's introduced in a sequel.
Yeah.
What are the other two?
One of them is Desperado, but the other one is in Machete, where he his character from Spy Kids appears in Machete Kills, but not in the first one.
Wow, that's such a I love when we have specific stats, but when it's more than two films, if it's just two films, it's like, well, whatever. But when it's like there's five films where Antonio Banderas appears in the sequel but not in the original, I think that's much
and
funnier.
Also, if we cover The Hitman's Bodyguard, he's in the second one of those, and he's in The Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard, and also when we cover Indiana Jones, he's going to be in the fifth one.
Nice. And because it's always like a significant character as well. I'm sure there's plenty of actors that have only ever been in the sequel to something, but like with Antonio Banderas, it's like Puss in Boots is the one that got the spin-off, and El Mariachi was like played by someone else in a previous movie, so it's like it's always a bit more significant than just a character, you know.
But yeah, so Desperado, where are we? Other fun fact about Desperado, this is the third biggest improvement in terms of percentage in box office receipts for a sequel.
Right.
Do you know what the top two are?
Box office, so a sequel that made more money than the original.
Yeah.
Terminator.
No. That is, I believe, in the top 10, though.
Okay, it'll be something with a low first budget. The first one had a low budget, and the second one had a big budget.
And box office receipts, so how much money it made, not how much money it spent.
Yeah, but I'm saying like it would be...
Sorry.
Oh, John Wick?
No.
No? Okay, tell me. I'm just going to be guessing.
I'm trying to find the fucking
I should have kept guessing so you could
Here we go.
Paranormal Activity? No, that made heaps of money at the box office. I got confused. Yeah. Sorry.
Okay, here we go. So we actually have covered it on Film Franchise Fortnite, and we spoke about it at the time. So with an improvement of 34,000% Boondocks Saints 2 All Saints Day outgrossed its predecessor, the Boondocks Saints.
Haven't thought about that movie in a long
but
time.
But that's because Boondocks Saints 2 made $10 million. The first one only made $30,000.
Right.
But fun fact, in second place is Jumanji Welcome to the Jungle, which outgrossed Zathura. However, if you don't count Zathura, then Welcome to the Jungle comes 11th.
Right.
Outranking the original Jumanji.
That's fun. That was the last podcast we did.
And now if you're talking about just the actual dollar amount, so they're like the biggest increase in dollar amount, number one is Jurassic World, outgrossing Jurassic Park 3 by $1.3 billion. And then Jumanji Welcome to the Jungle outsold Zathura by $899 million. And again, if you don't count Zathura, then Jumanji Welcome to the Jungle outranked the original Jumanji. And that comes 7th.
Nice.
So yeah, that's fun facts that we could have shared last week. Once upon a time in Mexico, then grossed an additional, like even more than that, and is the most improved second sequel of all time.
Right. There you go.
Yeah.
What are some of your favorite moments or sequences or even just things about Desperado?
I really like the opening with the Steve Buscemi scene you mentioned, which they had to shoot quite quickly because they could only afford Steve Buscemi for like 5 days. And yeah. Cheech Marin for like 6 days.
Cheech Marin, he plays the bartender.
Yeah. And then we cut to Antonio Banderas performing as El Mariachi. And I really like that performance scene. Mm. And yeah, it's just, I don't know, it's just like a cool movie.
Mm.
You end up having a lot of those things. It's like you can tell Robert Rodriguez. And I think he still directs in the style, even like looking at him talking about his work on like The Mandalorian, because he's doing the Book of Boba Fett as well, right?
I think so.
Yeah. That he still seems to kind of direct in a style of like, oh fuck, this would be cool. Oh, and then this would be cool. And he storyboarded his Mandalorian episode by like setting up his action figures and taking photos of it. Yeah, like I'm fascinated by Robert Rodriguez as a character, and he's an incredibly interesting person to listen to. One thing that I on Robert Rodriguez that I think that's always stuck with me is my tutor at B school, at film school, I was talking, because I think I just watched El Mariachi and I was talking about it with him, and we were talking about the whole Tarantino versus Rodriguez debate, and he said a quote that I think about all the time. And he said that he's like, I would rather work for Tarantino, but I would rather have Rodriguez work for me.
Yeah, right. No, totally.
It's like Robert Rodriguez is probably like a more talented person overall, but Tarantino's
jack of all trades. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's the jack of all trades. And I think even as like a producer, Rodriguez would probably be like really rewarding to like have that back and forth with, whereas Tarantino's like, well, I get to have my name on a Tarantino film, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, no, totally. I totally get that. And no, I agree, because watching these and watching Spy Kids and stuff, I always find myself hard pressed to say like that I really El Mariachi is probably my favorite Robert Rodriguez film, sadly.
Yeah, and Sin City's probably his other big, like, this is a good film.
I like Planet Terror as well, but I haven't seen it since I was a teenager. But like, whereas like Tarantino, like I love Pulp Fiction, I love Inglourious Basterds, like far more than I passively enjoy Spy Kids 2, you know?
Yeah.
And so I worry that he is more of a substance over quality kind of director in that sense.
And like,
not that his stuff is bad.
He has a show, because he has this network called Al Ray, which is like a full network, and he has the show on there called The Director's Chair, and it can be kind of hard to find sometimes, and then sometimes you can find every episode, but it's it's him interviewing other directors, and it's such a fascinating series, and it's like, and he's a great interviewer, and he's clearly mates with all these guys. He's an incredibly soft-spoken individual as well, which is kind of surprising, but he does like a two-part one with Tarantino, and it's like one of those, you can really tell their mates kind of thing. They talk about the movie nights they have. And he talks about just going through Tarantino's house and just lying around. He has all these like scripts willy-nilly that like, you know, he just, Tarantino just threw together in a weekend, and he compares it to this. There's a scene in the Three Amigos where like Chevy Chase is just like drinking, they're in the middle of the desert, and Chevy Chase is just like pouring this water all over himself while the other two are looking on thirsty, and he's like, this is how Tarantino treats his scripts, that he's just like, oh, there's just some bullshit that I wrote, like, yeah, I probably will never make it. And Robert Rodriguez is like, oh my god. And it's like, I would love if he just shared around those scripts more, and then a filmmaker like Robert Rodriguez could make, you know, his magnum opus written by Tarantino.
Well, because the thing is, though, and I think this is what I was trying to get at before, is like, I wonder if the reason I like El Mariachi more than Desperado is because Desperado and the rest of Rodriguez's career feels Tarantino flavored. Tarantino's in Desperado. He has very strangely has a very small character in Desperado.
Yeah, he's called Pickup Guy. The character was based on Tarantino, apparently, and I think he was going to cast Steve Buscemi as that role because he knew he couldn't afford him for long. And then he mentioned it to Tarantino. He's like, "Yeah, I'll play it."
Right, nice. Desperado feels like El Mariachi with the style of Tarantino influencing it, but Tarantino's so much better at the Tarantino style than Robert Rodriguez, and I feel like it impedes. Like, there's some great stuff in Desperado, and overall I would say I liked it. I really liked, there's a shootout in that bar where you meet Tarantino's character, and that's really cool, and it reminded me a bit of that the nightclub gunfight from John Wick, especially there's a part where El Mariachi and the guy he's trying to kill, they both run out of bullets, and there's like probably a 20-second long sequence where they're both reaching for the guns of all these dead bodies and clicking them, and they're all like without bullets. I was like, what a great scene. What a great crunchy concept for an action scene, you know?
Yeah.
And there's a desperation to it that's very palpable of like, hey, a desperadotion desperately trying to find, and like, all I could think about is like, if you're in that situation, the blood rush that must happen when you're trying to find another gun and they keep being empty, you know? So I really like that. There's another really cool scene where and it's just cheesy, where Antonio Banderas like slips off a building as something's exploding and then just leapfrogs his legs off the building at the last second, and it's this really cool like him leaping onto another building kind of thing. There's a sex scene in this movie that's very steamy, and
we can talk about that if you like.
I think, going on from last week's episode of Sexual Awakenings, I feel like it felt oddly familiar, this sex scene. I almost feels like I saw clips of it before I knew what sex was. Like, this movie was on TV or something. And I saw, and like my parents would have hurried me out of the room, but I saw like sweaty bodies of Antonio Banderas and Salma Hayek like mashing together. And like, I don't know, it influenced, I think, what I don't know if it was either this movie or something very much like this movie that I think was maybe one of the first sex scenes I saw, and I didn't remember that until watching this film for what I thought was the first time. It's very steamy, almost probably too steamy. And that feels like almost a tangible example of why critics are like, El Mariachi's this.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Pool, and this is like this, oh, you got all the money and sold out your integrity, because it's got like this gross sex in it.
But it is still like made for fucking nothing.
That's true.
Like Antonio Banderas, like quite recently has spoken about, like they cut a lot of corners, like safety wise, that he probably wouldn't do these days. Like the iconic shot with the Instagram photo we took for it of the like explosion that takes up the entire frame behind them. He said that like that was all real, and there was just this smell of burnt hair, of my hair and Salma's hair and the entire crew's hair. That just wow. after that shot, and there was another shot with like another stunt that was done with like a crane, and he's like, this wasn't like a film worker crane. This is just a construction dude who didn't really care that much, you know.
Yeah.
But back to the sex scene. So I've got two fun little pieces of trivia about the sex scene.
Oh, cool.
One is that on the DVD commentary, Rodriguez states that the day that they went to shoot the sex scene, the entire crew showed up to watch her get naked. And then, but they shot it on a closed set. So it was just Antonio Banderas, Salma Hayek, Robert Rodriguez, and the script supervisor, who apparently was like best friends with Salma Hayek. The other fun piece of trivia is that apparently during the filming of the sex scene, Salma Hayek became very uncomfortable and started uncontrollably crying.
Aww.
Yeah, so it makes the everyone showed up to see her naked thing a lot less charming. Not that it was ever charming. But like just recently, a couple of months ago, or at the start of this year, on the Armchair Expert podcast, Dax Shepard's podcast, Salma Hayek spoke about it and, said that it was like traumatizing for her, and it was she says that it like wasn't in the script, and like she kind of didn't really know that it was going to happen.
Wow, that's pretty dark.
Yeah, she does say she goes on to say that like it's like this is not she said Robert Rodriguez didn't pressure her in any way. She is like there's no, like he's not the bad guy in this situation or anything like that. She was like he was like a brother to her. It sounds like she said that the main thing that seems to have made her like uncomfortable is that like this was her first, because this was her breakout role, and this was her first time, you know, disrobing for the camera, and she's like, you know, self-conscious about her body and everything. And for like Antonio Banderas, who, you know, was a reasonably big star, who'd done a lot of films, especially like in the Spanish before he broke into the English language filmmaking, he was just, you know, this was just another day at the office for him. And I think and his kind of casual nature and how easily it came to him made her feel self-conscious that she felt self-conscious. Mm. And so, yeah, if you actually like listen to her talking about it, it's not as like, it doesn't sound as evil as she was uncomfortable during the sex scene and uncontrollably cried. But they ended up working around, and I think it was supposed to just be these like super long shots, you know, like dragged out, but I think it ends up being like a cut a little bit differently, and I think it probably works out for the best. But
yeah, I mean, you probably don't need any of it to be honest. If your friend is really that uncomfortable, it's probably not the most necessary scene to show in full. Interesting. Okay.
So yeah, that's not very cool.
What does desperado mean?
Desperate.
Does it?
I don't know.
What does that have to do with it? It doesn't feel like that. Like, is it a term? Is it like a Spanish, like a common Spanish
phrase?
It's
a desperate or reckless person, especially a criminal.
Okay.
It was actually originally, I was going to save this for, we talk about titles a lot on this podcast later on, but the movie was actually originally titled El Pistolero, which means what's the gunman, which to be consistent with El Mariachi. But
like
the studio requested the change. In Mexico, it was released as Pistolero.
That's I like the idea of these all being called El something.
Mm.
That's much cooler than just very random, disconnected titles. Because all three of them feel like you could watch them without knowing the other ones exist. They're all very standalone.
Well, it's similar to the Dollar Trilogy. I think you know that that's an influence on it, it's like, oh, yeah, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah,
apparently on the set of this, Tarantino suggested you should make another one. You should call it Once Upon a Time in Mexico, which showing his affinity for that titling scheme, you know, 20 years earlier.
That's funny because I think Once Upon a Time in Mexico is a very title for the third film.
But it's also... Yeah, like Robert Rodriguez claims that, I think, in the DVD commentary. He says that, like, Tarantino suggested it. But in Rebel Without a Crew, he mentions having ideas for, like, that he's going to want to make it into a trilogy.
Right.
So, who's telling the truth, Rob?
Yeah, this very important issue. Who's telling the truth?
All right, so that is Desperado. And lastly, for now... forever. We have Once Upon a Time in Mexico. That came in 2003. It was actually shot in 2001. It was like completed in 2001, but it was not released in 2003. And what's this one about?
Oh, God, I don't really know. This one is
it was just criticized for its convoluted plot. I'll give you that.
It's about, so Salma Hayek's been killed, and Al Mariachi is running around trying to kill other people. Johnny Depp is an FBI agent who shows up to, or is he CIA?
CIA,
can't remember. And he's involved, and there's a, essentially, okay, here's what I could tell people the plot is, even though there's a lot more to it. There is a coup, a presidential coup in Mexico being planned, and the CIA want it to happen, but then they want to kill the person who is orchestrating the coup so that he also doesn't gain control. And Al Mariachi is pulled in to be the guy to kill the overthrower. That's what it's about.
Yeah, so it's criticized for the convoluted plot and reducing the protagonist to a kind of secondary role, but Rodriguez has stated that this was intentional because he wants this to be the good, the bad, and the ugly of the trilogy.
Oh, of course. God, I didn't even think of it like that.
Yeah.
Because there is a good, bad, and ugly in this film.
Yeah, exactly. And...
because Willem Dafoe's in it as well, doing brown face. Yeah.
he hires a double who's just there's no prosthetics. It's just a guy who looks like Willem Dafoe.
Yeah. Which it feels like they found someone and was like, "You look a lot like Willem Dafoe. I'm gonna make a movie where Willem Dafoe needs a double in it." I did not think this was very good. I didn't like this movie.
It's a disappointing end to the trilogy. I think Johnny Depp is quite fun in it, and he's clearly having a good time. This came out the same year as Pirates of the Caribbean, the first one.
God, it feels like it's from a completely different era to Pirates of the Caribbean.
I know, right? Well, it's you know, you divide Johnny Depp's career into before and after. Pirates
this
of the Caribbean.
This is the last one before.
Yeah, like, I mean, yeah, it was shot 2 years before. But yeah, also, he's fucking 40 in this film.
Wow.
I would have guessed he's like 29. Maybe 32 at the oldest.
There's the coolest part of the movie, I would say, is the character by the end has his eyes removed and still manages to work his way through a shootout, a climactic shootout with no eyes. And I thought, like, this is a short film that you can pull from this film that would be quite fun to watch.
Yeah.
But the rest of the... I was so checked out by that point. what does this have on 10 toes?
It's actually higher than Desperado. It's at 66.
It's so not better than Desperado.
I think it's this film deserves 66, but Desperado deserves higher than 64.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, because I mean, like, this film, I wouldn't say it's like bad necessarily.
It's more just I wasn't pulled in by.
I love the simplicity of the first two, and then to do
third one. Yeah, exactly. By the 45-minute mark, I was so lost in the plot that like it kind of just became a chore to watch the rest of it because I was just like, ugh, whatever, I don't really understand what's happening in this film anymore, and so I just sort of gave up. Essentially.
Yeah, fair. Fun fact about this film, it was the first quote-unquote big budget film to be shot on high definition digital video.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a fun distinction. So yeah, like I said, it was shot in 2001 and completed in 2001, but they held on to it because there was a Screen Actors Guild strike like looming, and so he quickly shot this before Spy Kids 2 and 3. Yes, and so what Rodriguez shot, he got George Lucas, who's mates with, was shooting episode 2 at the time and showed him some footage. And he was like, fuck, this looks just as good, if not better than film. And was like, okay, well, I don't have enough time to shoot Spy Kids 2 digitally. So he said to Miramax, hey, I'll make a Desperado sequel, and then just in 6 days wrote the script.
Oh, which was my God. Of course it's this quality then.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
And so the initial draft was 65 pages long, which he padded with a subplot borrowed from an unproduced short film. And then Miramax said, oh, I don't like the subplot, so he removed it. So the script was only about 45 pages long.
God, that is bad. That's so bad. And you can so tell that that's... That suddenly it all feels like it makes sense.
Yeah, your scrappy, what he calls mariachi style filmmaking when it doesn't work out, you know?
Yeah. This is the case of a director getting too big for his britches.
What did you think of this film?
Well, because it's like what we've talked about before, how like great movies are simple and bad movies are convoluted. And I feel like this is a classic case of that, where it's like, the first one is about a mix-up between guitar cases, and this one is about a presidential coup that does. I don't understand who any of the people are. I don't understand what's going on. So I didn't really like that. I didn't really enjoy, other than that scene of Johnny Depp with no eyes. They took my fucking eyes. I didn't really like care about anything else. I thought there's a cool scene. It's like a flashback where him and Selma Hayek are chained together and hanging out of a roof and swinging each other to different ledges to try and avoid gunfire. And it almost felt like some kind of like indie Steam game you'd buy now, or it's I'm sure there is, where you're like chained
Unravel
together.
Unravel 2.
Yeah, you know, that's what I'm thinking of. I'm playing Unravel 2 right now. That's exactly what it's like. Yeah, saying it like it's hypothetical, where it's literally like the last video game I played. there's the occasional cool scene in it, and like I laughed at one point where he's riding like a motorbike or something, but he's like standing on it, and then he just jumps off it and very comfortably lands in like a pink convertible, and it's like just a cool shot. But overall, I just thought this was, do you know what I thought this was? I thought this was boring. I thought this was a boring movie. It's boring, it's dull, yeah. It doesn't have any of the charm of the original and none of the like innovative action scenes of the second one. Yeah. Feels like he just wanted to shoot it on that camera, now that you've told me that. Feels like he just built something so that he could shoot on the
camera. Yeah, and it's like, it does feel like, I mean, I guess like he says, it's intentional. It's the good, the bad, and the ugly of the franchise. But it feels like he wanted to make the Johnny Depp film, you know? This guy, you know, because you can do a movie about a CIA agent that comes to Mexico and you can't fucking see by the end of it.
Yeah.
And because there's a whole bit where he's like being guided around by a young boy as well, which is quite funny. It's like it's a fun dynamic, and you could probably make a whole film based around that.
Yeah. If anything, it feels a little underdeveloped that this character who's been in the whole movie now is like his life is permanently changed with his vision being taken away, and he's just sort of very cavalier about you can start a film there and I can believe a character wouldn't care, but to like see him before then and after then feels a little like he should. I'd be devastated. I'd probably just be like, yeah, just shoot me if I got my taken out.
There's a lot of stories about from behind the scenes about Johnny Depp like adding shit to his character. Like the character was just called Sans, and he came up with the other names in the script. And he said that he had the idea that he would wear like cheesy tourist shirts. Apparently he even sent his sister to Florida to buy the cheesiest tourist shirts she could find.
And Rango styles. It's like a cross between like Rango and Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
And also that he would have a sideline obsession with Broadway and favor strange, obvious disguises. And it's like, yeah, Johnny Depp is obviously all over the place as a person, but he's got such, it seems like such like an idiosyncratic sense of humor and like what he wants. Because there's the famous thing about that he thought that Jack Sparrow should have like a missing nose that was like reattached on and had gone black, and he would be afraid of pepper.
Yeah.
And it's like all this, and the fact that, like, you know, he played Donald Trump in that movie, he shot over a weekend for Funny or Die, and he's in those, the Kevin Smith movies. It's like, what is your deal, man?
Like, he's in an episode of Life's Too Short, I think, as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where he's like, nobody insults Tim Allen. And I thought that was very funny that Johnny Depp would just join in on insulting Tim Allen.
Yeah. But it is interesting seeing that kind of era of Johnny Depp, where it's like, yeah, the last vestige of, like, Johnny Depp who cared and was just real hot was his defining characteristic.
Pre-character actor Johnny Depp, almost.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
Definitely a character. Because, this is a Johnny Depp film far more than an Antonio Banderas.
Yeah, I don't even remember what Antonio Banderas did in the film.
No. didn't you message me another useless stat about Johnny Depp this weekend? Do you remember what it was?
Well, this is our second 2003 Johnny Depp film.
Well, no, but there's, like, if you include...
including this is our third franchise to feature Johnny Depp and a film in 2000 that came out in 2003, because he's in Nightmare on Elm Street and Free vs. Jason came out in 2003, but in two of those examples he's in the film which came out in 2003.
Very fun.
I mean, there might have we done any other Johnny Depp franchises, because there might be.
I don't think so. Is there, what's an obvious Johnny Depp movie? Willy Wonka. We haven't
that episode of SpongeBob.
Oh yeah, we did do that, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. Okay, he didn't have any other films that came out in 2003. But what else have we covered that he's been in? I don't know if
that had a movie released in 2003.
Yeah.
What else is Johnny Depp in that's just a sequel where he's not in other ones?
I guess if we do, what's it called? Harry Potter, because he's Fantastic Beasts. Although,
yep, no, I'd count that.
Did the Harry Potter film come out in 2003? No, it didn't. 2001, 2002, 2004.
Oh my God. It's like they knew.
They're like, in 10 years time we're gonna cast Johnny Depp in a film, and then in 20 years time they're gonna do a podcast about it. So yeah, that's Once Upon a Time in Mexico. So I did skip over a piece of dumb IMDb trivia from El Mariachi, so I'll just go back to that. So dumb IMDb trivia is a segment we do where, because IMDb is user submitted, any old fucking idiot can submit a piece of trivia, and they're quite often stupidly written or just stupid pieces of trivia in some way. This one says, repeated viewings of the film will eventually show that there isn't a scene which takes place outdoors at night.
You will only notice. It's a phenomenon. It's an anomaly. It's like, you'll only you notice have to
watch
it.
There's a scene that's removed if you watch it enough times.
Yeah, yeah. It's like that thing that we talked about. That's it doesn't do anything. That's the beauty of it. It's not a line from anything. It's there is not actually an outdoor night scene in El Mariachi.
Yeah, but it's so funny. Like, because the fact that, like, oh, there's nothing shot outdoors at night, probably for budgetary reasons, is an interesting piece of trivia, but it's like...
the way it's been phrased.
Eventually notice, like...
Yeah.
It repeated upon viewings. It's not even just viewings. Like, oh, watch it again and you'll notice this. it takes several watches. Other than just the interesting tidbit about... the sequel originally being titled El Pistoletto. Is there anything else you want to say about the titles? You kind of mentioned that Once Upon a Time in Mexico is not the best.
Well, it's in a way like the first two, while I'd prefer if there was way more consistency between the first two movies in terms of their titles, they still are like somewhat referring to El Mariachi as a character. Like Desperado, I'm presuming, is referring to him as well. And so it almost feels like the third one needed to have a similar title.
But then maybe is that doing Fistful of Dollars for a few dollars more, The Good, the Bad, the Ugly?
Yeah, well, okay, but you didn't have to do that. I think what it is first of all, El Mariachi is the best title of the three by far.
Yeah, and they mentioned, like, we didn't translate it because who would watch an action movie called The Guitar Player?
Mm. And I think that you could take that. I kind of wish they were all called El Mariachi, or at least the first two were both called El Mariachi, because I think it's such a interesting title. And I guess Once Upon a Time in Mexico doesn't really describe anything. It feels, for as much as Tarantino and Rodriguez seem to love this title, to me it just sounds like they couldn't come up with a title.
Mm.
You know? But
yeah, it's... According to Wikipedia, it says Once Upon a Time Mexico, also known as Desperado 2.
Right.
Which is like weird.
El Mariachi, El Pistoleto, El Presidente.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, yeah.
Yeah. Or El whatever assassinators in Spanish, you know? Like, I don't know. It feels like this could be the El trilogy. You know, the trilogy.
Yeah,
El
yeah.
trilogy. El trilogio. what's trilogy in Spanish? I bet that's a real obvious word.
All right. So trilogy, according to Google Translate, of course, trilogia.
Hmm.
And assassin. Assassina. Or assassino for masculine.
Those are cool titles. I think El Trilogia would be a cool name for this franchise, you know? I don't know. Whatever.
I'm just being silly.
I'm just being silly.
I just in a silly, goofy mood.
It's okay to show your silly sides.
All right, so now on to a segment we like to call, because it's the name of it, Continue the Franchise. This is a part of the
podcast. Continue a franchise.
This is where
franchise.
This is where we watch. No, we don't. Fucking fuck. I was doing the.
That's the whole podcast.
Yeah. This is where we. Talk about. Fucking. Sorry, I just got distracted by something. I'll tell you in a second what it is.
Okay.
This is where we talk about we talk about what the future, how the franchise has gone after the movies, and then we also pitch our own continuation.
Continuations. You're right, mate.
Sorry.
You're right, Richard.
I've been thrown by something.
What have you been thrown by?
I'll tell you after this.
Okay.
It will come out. It's important to the podcast. Okay.
Okay.
So there was a TV series which came out in 2014, which is like a remake. It's based on the first film. It's called El Mariachi.
Robert
Rodriguez was an executive producer on it. It ran for 71 episodes and one season.
What is this? This must be like a what are they called? Like a Mexican soap opera. Yeah, is that what it is? 71 episodes across one season, yeah. Sounds like that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, it's hard. Yeah, it's not really super clear. But
how do you squeeze that concept out to?
Yeah, it is interesting.
That's crazy.
Like there's the cinematography, and I noticed it in 2 and 3 because you know they look more like a film, but they. There is a lot of that almost like telenovela. Like, I think it's just like flat lighting, or like, I think the way he shoots dialogue scenes, there's a certain lens he's using, which, like, there's not a lot of depth between the, there's not a lot of depth of field. Like, or there is right. a lot of depth of field.
Right.
That it's like, yeah, there's not really any separation between the subject and the background. It's interesting. And then someone will bust into the room, and then it'll be this really dramatic shot. And it's an interesting thing that I think he plays it safe with his dialogue scenes. So what have you got to pitch?
All right. I've got El Mariachi Band, which is the same plot as the first film, but it's an entire band that get mistaken identity for an exact replica group of criminals that, you know, that's the joke. I thought of... trying to like find out what the guitar player is in different languages and associate that with like the instrument of that place or something like that. But I didn't do that. But I thought of the Scotsman and it's like bagpipes. I thought that'd be fun. Yeah.
What about Los Banditos?
What's that? Tell me.
Well, like bandits, but a band as well.
Yes. That's great.
Okay, my one is called Dos Mariachi. And so it's
they should have called that the second one Dos Mariachi. And then Tres Mariachi.
So it would be set it's set now. Antonio Banderas is still like a hitman for hire / mariachi on the side. Until one day he gets a surprising visitor. It's Carlos Gallardo playing El Mariachi himself. He's just been released from prison and he hears that someone has stolen his backstory.
This is so good.
And yeah, like, so it's essentially it wasn't actually recast. It's that
It's canonizing the recast.
It's canonizing the recasting that Antonio Banderas' El Mariachi has stolen his identity.
I love it.
And yeah, it would be like a battle to take them down. But yeah, that he's been in he was imprisoned for a crime he didn't commit for close to 30 years.
And then at the end, during the battle between the two mariachis, fucking Shark Boy and Lava Girl.
the shootout at the end is actually like it's like a dueling banjos kind of thing.
But then Edward Norton from Alita Battle Angel swoops on down, and he's part of it as well.
There is one other like brief continue the franchise as well. There's in 2019, Robert Rodriguez made a film called Red 11, which is a horror film about college kids becoming lab rats to make quick money, which is how he funded El Mariachi. And so it's essentially based on Rebel Without a Crew, his book. And cool. So one of the students is trying to raise $7,000, which is the budget of El Mariachi. It is actually also the budget of Red 11. He made the film for $7,000. And the tagline for it is like a new $7,000 film from Robert Rodriguez. It also stars Carlos Gallardo.
Oh, nice.
But yeah, it's this, he's got such an interesting filmography that it's like, yeah, I'm just going to make a $7,000 film again. He also made a film called 100 Years, which isn't going to be shown for 100 years. Stars John Malkovich. Apparently it's a short film. It's an ad for a whiskey. And they shot the short film and it's like being locked away for 100 years.
Wow.
All right. And now it's time to rank dat franchise.
Awesome. So over on our Letterboxd account, we have a list of all the franchises we've ever watched, organized by the first movie in each franchise. And just this week, actually, for those who aren't on the Discord or didn't hear about it, we added another little caveat to the film franchise Fortnite's ranking, which is we add a little gold star next to any franchise which we believe does not have any unanimously agreed upon weak link. It doesn't mean all the gold stars are at the top. It just means that, say, Kung Fu Panda, it feels like no one has like, there's no general consensus of which Kung Fu Panda is the best or worst film. It's essentially a mark of consistency which franchises often struggle to achieve.
Yeah.
So I don't think El Mariachi is going to qualify for a gold star, but I just thought people might want to check that out if you're looking at our rankings now.
You have to go read notes at the top of it. But all right, edit or delete this list.
Delete it! Free me from this curse!
I'm adding El Mariachi to the list. If you type in El Mariachi, it suggests Desperado Once Upon a Time. Before, no, I want to add the original. All right, so where is this going? This is going to be top half, yep.
Yeah, above the Nymphomaniac constant, I reckon.
Yep.
Throw a number at me, throw a movie at me, a franchise at me.
Okay, well, how does it compare to the Fistful of Dollars?
I think Fistful of Dollars is better.
But Fistful of Dollars is pretty bad, the actual Fistful of Dollars, the first one. That it's,
well,
like,
it's not bad. It's just we didn't understand
it. These are like in reverse order.
Yeah, yeah. Like in that I didn't understand Once Upon a Time in Mexico, but I loved El Mariachi, just like how I love Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, but didn't love Fistful of Dollars. Okay, I would say, okay, above Fistful of Dollars then. What's next?
Okay,
what's above
Halloween.
That? Yeah, it's probably better than Halloween.
Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th. We've got those three together. Well, we have to leapfrog all of those then because I don't want to split them up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ocean's 11.
Yes, I think so.
Ghostbusters.
No.
There it is, 29. I think that's it.
There you go. Sweet, I love it. And what's next, Richard? What are we doing now? We're
Now we're heading over to patreon.com. Where
/ cultpopture.
Where if you become a patron, you can comment every second franchise we do. We put it up to you guys to decide. And you comment, and then you like the ones that you want to see us cover. And
for a little as a dollar a month as well.
Yeah.
Before you tell us what has won, though, Richard, I would just like to say that if you enjoyed listening to this, maybe you were looking for a podcast about El Mariachi and you found this one and you're like, hey, these Kiwi guys are kind of cool. I kind of like their dry wit, that famous Kiwi wit, then why not consider supporting the podcast? You can support us monetarily over on Patreon, or you can just like all our social media pages. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. We have two YouTube channels, one for video essays, one for the podcast, where you probably maybe are even listening to this episode. So those are Cult Popture and Cult Popture Again. And we've also got a Discord where you should come and check out and talk to us, talk to the rest of our fan base. And yeah, there's a link to that in the show notes. But beyond that, Richard, what is the winning franchise from this month's
Alrighty. Vote? So this has been the numbers, I remember the first time, you know, it was like, wow, 10 votes on one, and now, you know, like it's we're getting regularly getting quite a few ones competing. So it's been an incredibly tight race this month between Tremors, the Cornetto trilogy, Egrut's Cornetto trilogy, and Rocky/Creed. So close that it's currently a three-way tie between those three, which is what distracted me earlier.
Wow.
So at time of recording, that is a three-way tie between those three films. It wasn't when we started recording, but now it is.
So do we create a little franchise roulette out of these
three?
I think
we have to, yeah. So what do we do? Just a random number generator.
Yeah, 1 to 3.
1 to 3.
And we assign on pod what each number is.
All right.
So what, Tremors is 1, Cornetto's 2, and Rocky's 3?
All right. I'm going to take a screenshot of this with like a time on it as well, so that people can so that if people are like, I can prove that it was taken, you know, at this time.
Okay. And we'll post that in the Discord.
Yeah. So I'm going to save that snip, and it's... Okay, well, fuck, what's the time? Normally it does it, it gives it a screenshot of time. So 12:57 on the 14th of the 8th. 14:08. All right. Saved that in my pictures folder. Okay.
All right, so 1 Tremors, 2 Cornetto, 3 Rocky.
Yeah, all right.
3.
What does that mean? That's Rocky.
That's Rocky.
You've been... Wow, what a triumphant tale for Rocky, franchise you've been wanting to... Yeah, yeah, that's so awesome. You're excited? Do you want to run the episode, or do you want me to scramble?
We'll talk about it off pod, I guess. but yeah, so yeah, there's 8 films.
And you want to do them in one episode?
I think we may as well. We'll see.
Could do back-to-back Rocky episode and a Creed episode.
Yeah, it saves us having it on off week, for one.
It does. It does save us having to do it off week, Richard. Cool. Okay, well, let's think about that. We'll let people know. We should post that in the Discord now, but not tell anyone anything tell them what we decided to do. So it's still somewhat of a mystery.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Those checking the Discord, those checking the Patreon. But thank you so much for listening, everybody. And stay tuned for after this music finishes, you're going to hear something called the post-credits scene. So stay tuned for that. And what's Spanish for goodbye? God, why don't I know this? Adios?
Yeah.
Adios! All right, welcome along, everybody, to the post-credits scene. This is a scene at the end of each episode where if you donate $5 or more, stingy bastards, over at patreon.com/cultvopture, you get to give us something to talk about in this, the post-credits scene. Richard, who gave us the post-credits scene for this episode, and what is it?
All right, today's one comes to us from Craig Major, who says, if you could unwatch
Major
something...
Major pain in my ass. I'm just kidding, Craig.
If you could unwatch something just to experience it for the first time again, what would it be? This is one of those classic questions that, like, I feel like we get asked. It's like there's a few that's like, if you could erase my memory of it completely, because there are quite a few films that I knew twists before going into it that it's like, oh, it would have been so cool if I had no prior knowledge of that.
Do like fucking Empire Strikes Back with that. I wonder what that would feel like.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. But you like you still have knowledge of all the other Star Wars films. You still remember the prequels, but you watch Empire Strikes Back. You're like, what?
I would say like maybe something like two shows I'm pivoting this into a different question almost. But the two TV shows that I've enjoyed the most in the past 5 years. Would be The Good Place and American Vandal. And those are two shows that I think would be very rewarding to watch for the first time again, which is why I showed my flatmates American Vandal end of last year, and we all really enjoyed it. And it was great to revisit it and watch it again and just be so amazed by the like storytelling that doesn't need to be that good being that good in that show. So that'd be cool. I need to force them to watch The Good Place with me so that I can rewatch that.
One that for some reason immediately sprung to mind was Rise of the Planet of the Apes. That like Caesar's no. I don't remember that hitting me as hard as I think it should. But I remember Caesar is home at the end, like really being like fuck.
Right.
And so I would love to go back and watch, like, especially to have seen that in a cinema. Like, I feel like that would have been such a great moment. I don't know. There's your answer. Yeah, also, cool. Like, Memento and The Prestige are like two movies I really love that, you know, are best as a best done as a first time watch.
Yeah. Nice. Cool.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.